Good evening. As always, I desire your all's prayer. I appreciate the song, "He's Everything That I Need." And I mean that I literally, everything that I need. Y'all can have some of him too, but for me, he is everything that I need. I have a little thought that I'd like to challenge us with this evening. And it does kind of tie back to what all do we need. So what I wrote on the board is a stranger in the land. And I'd like to start off reading in Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11, starting off in verse 13, says, "These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city." Now the word "stranger" here means, in that first verse, "for they are strangers and pilgrims." A stranger is a foreigner, an alien. But one thing I thought was interesting was some of the sub-definitions. It says, "without knowledge of or without a share in." And it got me thinking of my time living in Germany. You know, I was a resident of Germany. I lived there. I had an address. You know, I was legally there. I could get phone service to the place. I could pay bills. But I wasn't a German. They would have considered me an alien. When they had their political discussions, I could listen in. I could, if I was talking to a German and wanted to weigh in on the subject, I could weigh in. But when it came time to vote, I had no share in that. That wasn't for me. I wasn't part of them. I was a stranger in the land. And the word "pilgrim" struck me. I looked that one up, and it didn't. A lot of times when we think of pilgrim, we think of it from what I term the religious sense. You know, you hear people a lot of times in different religions, they'll make pilgrimages to certain places. But this pilgrim doesn't mean anything like that. The word here is actually one that means someone who comes from a foreign country into a city or land to reside there by the side of the natives. So these people here in this chapter, the witnesses of faith, it says they were strangers and pilgrims. They were aliens where they lived. And while they may have settled there to live by the natives in the land, they never were part of those people. Are we strangers and pilgrims on earth? Look at yourself today and consider, what are you? Where is our home? If you had to tell somebody, "here is my permanent home of record, this place is who I define myself by," what would it be? Would you say you're a citizen of the United States? That's what defines you? I think of folks, you know, that we met in Kenya, folks I've met in Germany, around the world. You know, there is a part of us that would identify as, this is where we live, this is where we're citizens from, but is that really who we are? Do we stop there when we define who we are? We leave it on planet Earth and we stop looking to heaven? It said these folks plainly declared that they were just stopping by on the way through, is what one of the commentators had to say about this. These people of faith, they said, yes, I'm living here. Did Abraham, do we ever have record of him referring to himself as a Canaanite? Even though the Lord had said, I'm going to give you this whole land, it's yours. I'm going to give it to your seed. Hebrews 11 and 10, what was it that Abraham looked for? For he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Abraham was the father of faith, wasn't he? Abraham was a stranger on earth. Now, I don't know about you, but for a man to be a stranger on earth, God told him plenty about what was going to happen to his seed. That you're going to live here and eventually your seed's going to go back to Egypt. They're going to spend 400 years there. They're going to come out. This land that you're walking today, I'm going to give to them. But Abraham never called himself a Canaanite. Why? He walked all over that land as far as we can tell, because the Lord said, wherever your feet hit, pretty much it's going to be yours someday. And you know what he never found? That city made by God. The place he was looking for. There is a heavenly city whose foundation and builder is God. That's where Abraham said, that's my home. That's my citizenship. That's where I'm going. And yes, you've given me a lot of stuff here. I appreciate it, Lord. But I'm not a Canaanite. I'm not from here. I'm just passing through, looking down through the ages. So I want us to stop for a moment and consider Lot. Take a little walk down Lot's life. Now, Lot and Abraham's servants, we know, got in a little disagreement. They had lots of cattle, lots of stuff, and the two groups are trying to figure out who was going to graze where, who was going to get to water where. They're kind of arguing, and so a suggestion was made. Let's divide ourselves out. And Abraham told Lot, well, you pick the side you want, and wherever you go, that's fine. I'll go the other way. What did Lot consider as he looked across the land? He looked out, and he starts assessing the land. And he saw this plain, well watered everywhere. And if anybody knows some of the history of our country has lots of land, but not all of it is well watered everywhere. And in some of the expansion of the United States, there were disagreements that came up because you might have plenty of land, but you didn't have water rights. We're hearing about it today in our country because of the dryness out west, the drought, where people are looking at the river and they're like, well, we've got water rights to this river, but guess what? When there's not enough water in the river to give everybody what they claim to have a right to, it's raising eyebrows. So Lot's sitting here and he looks out and goes, this place is well watered everywhere. This is a good place. And then there's a comparison made, like the garden of the Lord, like Eden. Had to be a good looking land. Genesis chapter 13. And starting in verse 12. Says, and Abraham dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. So Lot looked out here. He saw this well-watered land, this plain, this land that looked wonderful, looked like the garden of the Lord. Do you think he also knew much about the inhabitants of the land? It says that they were wicked here. It doesn't sound like they became that way after he moved there. So Lot looks at it and he sees what's going on down there, but it's well watered. It's a beautiful land. And he moves there. Before long, he's living amongst their cities. And before long, we have record, he's living in town. Doesn't sound like he's living in tents anymore, because later on, when the angels came to get him out of town, they shut the door. I haven't ran into too many tents with a door you can just shut. But he's living in town now. Is he a citizen of the town? Hard to say. We don't really know what their legal systems was back then. But there's a story where four kings went to do battle against five kings. Because the four kings had been getting tribute, I guess, from these other five kings, and they decided to stop paying, and a battle occurs. And as part of that, the four kings defeated the five kings, and Sodom was taken, and the people were captured. And they took Lot with them. As far as those four kings were concerned, you lived in town, you looked like him, you talked like him, you're one of them. Off you go. Was Lot really a citizen of the land? Because why didn't they attack Abraham, his uncle? Abraham had kept himself separate, hadn't he? Lot had moved in, moved close. So we know that Abraham went and not only freed Lot, freed the people of the city. And one thing that stood out to me, if you read that account, is the king said, well, we want to give you some, you know, you went and you got all this stuff back for us. We want to give you some as thanks for what you've done. And Abraham did something that I find very intriguing, because it speaks to some of his mindset of how he viewed himself and these people. He said, I don't want any of it. Because I don't want you telling anybody you made me rich. I want to keep you and us separate. I don't want to get my goods tangled in with your goods. I don't want people to think I'm a part of you, is what he is essentially saying. I want to keep it clean. I want to keep it separated. I'm a stranger in your land. And don't forget it. He wasn't trying to blend in. He was like, no, I'm different. I'm not one of you. We know that the evil there in Sodom, the Lord eventually came down, sent his angels into town to go look it over. The angels went into town, and the menfolk in the town start misbehaving, trying to do things that shouldn't be done. And Lot goes out and he tries to talk to the townsfolk. Look, you don't need to do this thing. You shouldn't do it. Did the townsfolk say, okay, well, you're one of us. We'll listen to you. You know what you're talking about? The townsfolk told him, look, you're not one of us. As long as you've been here, as long as you've tried to blend in, as long as you've tried to mix in, we remember you're not one of us. And you better get out of our way, because if you don't, we're going to treat you worse. After all that time that Lot had lived amongst them, they had never let him be one of them. Even he was still a stranger in the land. I want us to think about our Christian walk. Do we think that we can get close to the world and change them with our logic, with our arguments? I want us to think about something for a bit. Somebody comes up and puts a gun to your head, says they're going to kill you. What goes through your mind? Your safety? Whether or not you're going to die right now? Or do you think about, please don't, because if you kill me, your soul will be marked with something that you don't want it to be marked with. I'm not worried about dying, but you've got to realize if you kill me, it's going to put a mark on your eternal soul. Did Jesus not say that when the people crucified him? Father, forgive them. Don't hold this against them. Don't let this stop them from coming to you. They're killing me, but I'm not a citizen of this earth anyway. I've got a heavenly kingdom that I'm about to go to. And as much as this life, my flesh wants to hold on to it, don't hold them it against them for taking it. Don't we have that record of Stephen? The people stoning him because he preached the truth. And Stephen's response, once again, was not, Lord, protect me. Lord, save me. But Lord, don't lay this to their charge. Why was they able to act that way? Paul, later on, there was a time where he said everybody had forsaken him. But he asked that that not be laid to those folks' charge. Why was their hearts looking that way? Because they're not of earth. They realize that this life, this physical life we live, sometimes I think of a baby in the womb. Have you ever thought about 9 months? A child is in the womb. And life as it knows it is warm, comfortable, fed, taken care of. But is that the intent of that life, is to just live in the womb? No, at some point, a birth occurs, and then a much longer life is available for that child to live, to grow up, to have other children. Have you ever considered how traumatic birth must appear to an infant coming out of the womb? End up outside, and I'm just talking from some of the things I've seen, held up by 1 or 2 feet, somebody smacking you on the backside to make you cry. Would seem pretty traumatic. But what's happening? You're being brought into fullness of life. For us Christians, when we go through the veil of death, yes, it's traumatic. But we're actually entering the fullness of life. We're going to be home. We're going to be where all of the things in this world will not matter to us. They won't make a difference. There's another thing I find interesting looking at Lot. So now the men have came in. They've listened to him get threatened by the local townspeople. And they pulled him inside the house. And they tell him, look, you've got to flee into the mountains. And Lot said, no. I don't want to. Have you considered Lot's reactions from having joined himself, if you will, to the people of the land? Now the Lord is bringing judgment down and Lot's saying, no, I don't. I know you say I need to leave, but I'm not ready to. I don't want to. He delayed. The angels finally had to grab him and his family by the hands and take them out of the city. Now, we don't know if they actually led them out or if they, you know, levitated them out. It doesn't really say. It just says they brought them out of the city. They were reluctant to leave, even though they knew they were talking to the angels of the Lord who were saying judgment is coming upon this place. Why were they reluctant? they've gotten a little attached to the land. They had started to identify with the land, with the earth, with the worldly things going on. So eventually, even though they were told, you don't want to be found anywhere on the plains, you need to get to the mountains, eventually they said, well, what about this little town of Zoar? It's just a tiny town. And they said, okay, but you have to get to that town. Leave and don't look back. And we know what Lot's wife did, don't we? She looked back. Why? I will tell you, when I left Germany to come home, I enjoyed my time in Germany, but I really wasn't looking back. I was happy to be headed back here. Why? Germany is not my home. It was a nice place to live for a while, interesting place, friendly people. But it wasn't, I didn't identify with it. I didn't really have any connection with it other than I had lived there. I'd spent time there. They had gotten attached to Sodom. So when we start looking at the world around us, thinking about Lot, do we sometimes look at the way the world looks and we say, wow, that looks like the well-watered garden of the Lord? Because it was. It did look like that according to what was said. But do we start confusing this apparent likeness of a well-watered garden of the Lord with an actual blessing from God? Because there was judgment coming to that place. What do you think Lot's story would have been like if him and Abraham would have sat down first and said, well, let's pray about it. Let's go seek the Lord on where we should go. Do you think there might have been a difference in how the story went? Because the Lord might have said, well, yeah, you tell you what, Abraham, you could go this way, and Lot, you can go up here. And the Lord might have said, no, by the way, don't go into the plain. It looks good, but you're not going to want to be there. Because I've got plans that are coming together for it based on the inhabitants and their evil that you know about. One of the things there in chapter 11, starting in verse 13, where it was talking about the people in a cloud of faith, if you will. It says that they were, if they had been mindful of their earthly countries, they could have returned to them. We know that Abraham did send some of his servants back to get wives from his family members. But he didn't want to send his children back there, did he? He said, go get a wife, bring her back. Why? I don't want my children going back there. When the Israelites came out of the land of Egypt, how did they look back at the land of Egypt as they got on into the wilderness? Do you think they saw it as a well-watered garden of the Lord, full of watermelons and leeks and onions and garlic and all kinds of good food? Now, this is a place that had oppressed them, had treated them miserably, and yet they looked back on it with fondness. And many of times wanted to go back. We're going to turn. We're going to go back. Why? Because we've identified with that land. We really didn't see ourselves as strangers. We just saw ourselves as oppressed, but we had started identifying with them. You know, the world wants to draw us into their conflicts. The world wants its issues to become our issues. They want your way of thinking to match theirs. Do you know even if you conform, they will never see you as one of them? They'll treat you nice as long as you're conforming. But try to hold up the standard and get them to measure to it and see what happens. You'll get told just like Lot got told. You're not really one of us. Nice try. We're not going to follow you. Where do we want our allegiance to be? And I say this for any country you look at. The world lately, it seems like pick a country and you will find that there's been leaders that have focused on, I'm going to call it patriotic zeal. Whether it's Russia, Ukraine, England, these are all countries that's been in the news for pushing this patriotic zeal, trying to get people to line up. China and what they're doing in Hong Kong. There's all these things, and there's people to say, well, you need to take a side. You need to pick a side. Do you know what we need to do? We need to remember we're strangers here. Those battles aren't ours. The Lord will help fight whoever needs to fight those battles. The Lord has used earthly armies. But if you've read the Bible, you'll start realizing a lot of the earthly armies he used wasn't the Israelites. It was other armies he brought in to settle things, to issue judgments that he had against people. God is in charge. Let's look at Luke chapter 17. Luke chapter 17 and verse, starting in verse 30. Luke 17 and 30 says, "Even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. In that day he which shall be upon the housetop and his stuff in the house, let him not come down to take it away. And he that is in the field, let him likewise not return back. Remember Lot's wife." I want to challenge us. Remember Lot's wife. She was drawn back to things in the world. Drawn back into whatever had her heart, if you will. We don't want to be approaching eternity, approaching God, with things in the world that we identify with so closely that if God says, "I want you to walk away from it," that we would have to say, "But I really don't know if I want to." Because when you look back, when you're supposed to leave something, a lot of times what you're indicating is, I'm reluctant to leave. There's a part of me that would rather not. I would just challenge us all. Let's all remember to look back at the fathers of faith. And remember that even we are just strangers in the land. Y'all pray for me.